It's December 13th, 2016, and we're coming to you live. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, from the Santa Cruz Mountains of California, from Lupin Lodge. And at Lupin Lodge, you know what? Clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
Ooh, and I'm Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Elisa Strider, who lives with him.
Ooh.
He thinks he's Santa Claus. Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition. And believe me, the human condition needs some examination. We are sprinkled with laughter, with good music, and we're sprinkled with a few surprises.
And it's pouring down all kinds of mishmash of ideas that are just drenching us. So watch out.
Our time tonight is sponsored by Jeremy Bead, who's a spirit brother and fellow artist, and by
Go Raw. And Go Raw has the most nutritious, delicious natural products. And you can get Go Raw at Whole Foods and Costco. Or go to GoRaw.com to find out more about Go Raw.
And where you can find it in your neighborhood.
You mean it?
I mean it.
It's like, I want to say to the electorate, I always do that, the electorate, you mean it? This is what we want to lead us? That's why tonight's phrase of the week, do you mean it, raises that very question. Also, do you ever notice how mean can refer to meaning or just being mean? So, let me ask you a question. Looking at what we really mean when we say certain things, like when our president-elect says global warming is a hoax, or I'm open to it, which do you mean, Donald?
Is he open to it being a hoax, or is he open to being real?
That's right. Like, also, I want to ask Donald, what does it mean when you select three generals and three executives from Goldman Sachs to be in the presidential cabinet? Well, there is representing the populace.
Well, it's very clear what it means. It means that's what is our country. It's a military corporation.
Industrial complex, and is giving the rest of us inferiority complex, especially economic inferiority, as well as disempowerment.
Well, but the interesting thing is that, and I've read this in so many different places, that Donald Trump is inheriting an economy that's really doing well. So all he can do is mess it up.
Well, you say that glibly.
I'm sorry, yeah. I just liked it.
You did like it, but I'd have to say that it's not doing well for a lot of people. But before we get into that any more deeply, while I've been thinking about all this perplexing dilemma at the geopolitical level and the social economic level and all the rest, the racial equality level and all the amazing challenges, but then there's this other side, you know, as I study and ponder the principles of what I think of as spiritual living, I also want to ask that perspective, do you mean it? And I really hope it does. All right, for example, when I read a line, this particular line from the Arantia book, which I like to reference because it has great lines like this, a lasting social system without a morality predicated on spiritual realities can no more be maintained than the solar system without gravity.
Really? Well, I tell you, do you mean it?
Well, that's what I want to find out. Let's get into that. I mean, so because here I'm facing this dilemma, as all are, and some are already suffering from it a lot, and more is to come. The dilemma of the security state and the global warming and the losing our power and
terrorism
and
being scared,
college debt, and all of it coming out of fear. So I've been reading and absorbing all this, as I mentioned last week on our show, from so many different perspectives, and I think I gave myself a stomachache last night.
I think you did. You were really sick.
I was full of it, and clearly I was full of it because so much came out. But we won't.
Oh, that's okay. You mean that?
I'm not saying. And then, but today I thought, you know, I've allowed myself to immerse in all of this, and it really is very agonizing. I started to actually feel some agony about our condition, and so then I thought, maybe I need to balance this out today. So while I was working cleaning up the garbage and the poo-poo and all the bathrooms that I clean. Rochelle's shaking her head. Do you really need to talk about that? Anyway, I was listening to Marianne Williamson. I don't know if you all know who she is, but she's an author and a very powerful speaker, and she's a student of A Course in Miracles, which we often quote on this book, and she's been very out there. She even ran for Congress on this show. Did I say on this book?
Yeah.
See, there you go. You wouldn't. I wouldn't mean that to say that. See, like if.
Do you mean it?
No, I wouldn't mean it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of what is it when you know, you reboot, where you reload and you start over again? And I was so grateful.
Reboot.
That's it. So I kind of rebooted my psyche by listening to her because she reminded me that everything that precedes this comes out of this present moment. B, that the universe has pretty much got it organized, and you're just asked to cooperate. And if you need an example, look at how these individual cells that form little tiny things that become babies, et cetera, sort of organize themselves into a being. And she reminded me that the universe is like that, and that my opportunity slash job is to just get present and allow that orientation to guide and lead me. But the biggest thing that she reminded me of when she said, don't follow the kind of self-made plans or strategies. Those were the things she used. But since I've been thinking so much about a strategy, and I was reminded that it's coming out of my head to let it go, truly let the heart lead. And as I look back on my life, anything that was of any significance and opportunity that ever came to me came from, just came. You know, not that I didn't do anything, but it's not something I could have manufactured out of my own thought. Like you, for example, I never would have picked someone your height.
You wouldn't have been able to reach me.
That's right.
I started out at 6 feet. I'm now down to 4'10".
You made it?
I do. I mean it. I wanted to. I was playing with mean. Do you mean it? You know, I think of things that I say, you know, and do I mean them? You know, do I say them? So I started writing this. Do we mean what we say? Do we say what we mean? Or is it all a ruse to gain favor? Recognition. Do we have the meaning of who we are? What do we mean when we say, I mean? I put my stamp on what I say. Quote me. Do I grow beyond what I say? I mean, I am what I say.
You mean it?
I mean it.
Wow.
You know, you were talking about people who are unhappy, scared, etc. And mm-hmm. I realize, you know, we're on the cusp of a huge change. It's been changing slowly, and I don't mean, you know, somebody like Donald Trump coming along, or, you know, who's got maybe very far out ideas. That's not going to change us. Our change will be in reaction to all that. Our change will be as a result of that, but not because of him. It's just that change itself is very scary. I mean, when change happens, we have to change. That's the part that's scary. Oh, yeah, it's changing, but then we have to change. So we're moving out of fuels that pollute and make our life horrible. And it doesn't matter whether they believe it or not. If it's true, it's going to hit us in the face. So it doesn't really matter. Do you believe in these religions? It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. It's just for you. Because what's real will always, will always show up, will always truly have meaning in your life. Big, fat meaning. So I think that realizing more than anything that we have to change. Nobody can make something change. We have to change. And it's scary, and I just feel like sometimes I have to admit that. Hmm. It's really scary to change, you know. I think we grow old because we have to finally make a peace with change. Because I look in the mirror and I don't see the same person that used to look in the when it come back at me in the mirror 20 years ago. It's a different face.
Well, but if you listen, if we listen very closely, see, to that other perspective, we might, well, let's listen, see what we hear. Just thinking, what if the story is true about the little child and coming into and being kind of the light of the world? And actually, what if it were true? It's
a lot of people believe it's true.
I understand, and so I'm asking the story. Do you mean it?
Who sang this song?
Linda Eder. The wonderful Broadway singer. She was in Dr. Jekyll and Hyde and some other shows. Wonderful singer.
I think when the truth is so big, you have to put it into a package that's so small. It's like taking a diamond. And you have to put it in a small package, because if you put it in a package to match its size, we wouldn't be able to handle it.
So what's the small package you're referring to?
Oh, a story. You know, this is what happened on the night and the thing, and it's a story. It's almost a parable sometimes, I think, in the sense that the way birth comes about is a miracle, you know? And to infuse birth with all the truth of the world, which can only give us a tiny little bit of it, because we're not ready yet. It's like, this is what you are going to be, but this is what you are. And making peace with what we're going to be and who we are gets us closer to who we're going to be.
And you heard that here, folks. That was Rochelle Strider telling it like it is. And I think she meant it. And that's why we do Inside Out, the Naked Truth, every week. So the other thing that I want to go back to, what if it's true? And here's a way of coming at it that's poetic and musical. It's a poem that I wrote called Seduction. And it is a seduction. So let's see if we can get seduced. Seduction by Errol Strider. Come, Mary. Come, Joseph. I have a word I would give birth to, a word I would make flesh. I would the world know me in the simple attire of itself, its humanhood. Come, Mary and Joseph. Be not afraid to conceive me, of me, for me. To nourish together a child of promise. To raise God in your home. I would that you share this child with me, that he be soft as flesh and hard as bones, wistful as spirit and open as thought. Come, Joseph, be the implanter of divinity for me. Come, Mary, receive my essence into your cavity. Be parents of my son, the personhood of who I am. For I have given my I am to my universe, and I would that all see the depth of who they are, the richness of who they can be. I would give my personality to inhabit helplessness as a lesson to all my children of the power of surrender, of how much I can trust myself to them, to you. That they might be inclined to trust themselves more to me, that we may become a child together and suckle each other. Joseph, come. Mary, come. And be not afraid of me, fear not to fall. You may eat of me now. You may drink of my soul and pour it out for all to see the stunning hope that I am, that I can be. As each of you give birth to me as the child in you, innocent and free, the child in you, embodied divinity. That was called Seduction. Probably wrote that, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, I guess. And the music was by Arvo Pärt. It was called Spiegel in Spiegel, which is about dogs, I think. Spiegel dogs, isn't it? He wrote it for his dog.
Spiegel does not mean dogs.
Professor, is that not true? Yeah, he had Spiegel dogs. I had Spiegel.
You're the silliest people.
I had Spiegel dogs and I had Spiegel hounds. And I mean it. I was like very much a hound. I was hounding people all the time. Was hounding me, and so I got a pair of hounds so I could hound them back, because they are hounding me about the deplorable state of the affairs of the world and how the illusion was showing up in such a palpable way that they were so, like, upset about it. And they're hounding me, Professor, what should we do about all of this? What should we do about the craziness that's going on in the world? And I told them, I said, go get a mirror and look into it and start making crazy faces. And then you will see what the problem is. And you will go out and you will get other people who are perpetuating this nonsense to look at themselves and laugh at themselves for being driven by fear. And that is how you can make a difference. But of course, as you said earlier, it starts with you. I mean it.
You do mean it. I can feel that.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about, you're talking about how people see things. Well, you know, I think what I'm experiencing is like we hold on to a narrow view of life because it feels safe. The minute the view gets so much bigger, it doesn't feel safe anymore. And the strange thing is our technology has made our world very small. Very small. And But what we don't see is how much is out beyond our world, which is enormous. And if we could have the humility to realize that we are this small world in the universe, to have that humility and to realize how absolutely wonderful that is to be part of this small world, instead of having aggrandizement and huge bloated egotistical views of who we are, to realize we are part of something wonderful, therefore we are wonderful. And we don't have to try to prove it every 10 seconds or nanoseconds or nanoseconds of our lives.
No, we don't have to try and prove it. And we had some nanoseconds on last week, as you may recall.
Yes, I do recall.
And it's, but, you know, I have to say that it's, what you're saying is true. It's a small world.
It's a small world after all. It's a small, small, small.
You mean it?
Yeah. I remember going through that ride at Disneyland, and I remember thinking that child in me, that innocence in me, responded to it. And I thought how, you know, and then they make these rides sort of thrilling rides, and you see your heart can pound, and you go zooming down something or zooming over something.
Well, get me in one of those things.
But going through that ride, you know, with that song going on and all these different races and cultures of people just showing up in these little tiny little puppet kind of peoples, and it was just beautiful. And I don't want to ever give up my innocence, because it feels like I give up my soul when I give up my innocence.
Well, there's the key that I think is the thing we're pointing to tonight, is the innocence, that whole thing about opening up, because we're surrounded and permeated by cynicism and distrust are big factors in our consciousness. And I think one thing we can do, and Christmas can be a good catalyst for this, is become willing at least to suspend the cynicism. The cynicism being the point of view that says, yeah, right.
Yeah, but cynicism, which is you know, like an offspring of fear, it keeps us safe. If I'm cynical, I'm pushing off, and nothing can hurt me because I already know it's shit.
It's an armor, isn't it? Yeah, right. It's an armor.
Right, then I won't be disappointed because this is what it is.
That was good, yeah. Sorry, I was like...
Yeah, I mean it.
You do mean it.
I do.
But here's my question and my invitation to all of us is to at least be willing. Marianne Williamson talked about that today on the tape, and how the Course in Miracles says you just have to be willing. A little willingness is all that is required to look at your point of view and willing to see it differently, willing to have a different belief or perception about it, and see what shows up. It's probably not going to be a lot worse than what you're already using to fill in that space.
That's what I see. I know. But it's scary, you know, and to realize that you have to start there. The first place we have to be is to admit we're frightened, because our pride doesn't let us do that. You know, I'm not scared of nothing, you know. So to realize we're scared, yes, we are scared. And to look at that and embrace it and say, yeah, like you would a child who had a nightmare. Because that's what it is. It's just a nightmare.
You mean it?
I mean it.
Huh. Okay.
And you just comfort that child, which is ourselves, and say, yeah, I know. It looks really scary. It sounds really scary. But you're all right. Hmm. You're all right. Hmm. Not it's all right. It has no meaning
yeah,
whatsoever.
It may come in and kick your ass, but you're all right.
You're all right. Exactly. And there's a difference, because if you're, I know I'm all right, I can make a true, wise determination of what to do with the thing that kicked my ass.
That's right.
I can turn my other cheek. Kick my ass, turn my other cheek. Did you get it?
It's coming in. It's coming in. It's almost there.
Errol, you're bad. You're very bad. You're just very bad. And I mean it. I mean it. You're very bad.
So I want to go back to this thing about you have to recognize your fear. There was a very common orientation in evangelical Christianity that you have to be first convicted of sin. People first had to see themselves as sinners before they could pay the church to give them a bunch of money to absolve them from their sins. But that's another story.
and another religion.
But I've been thinking about the reality of that, especially as I've shared on this program before, the antonym for sin that came to me, S-I, don't tell me.
You can't mean that.
Sins. Stands for seduced into nonsense. So I've mentioned it before, but we haven't really gotten into it. So what's the nonsense, you see? What's nonsensical about it is that the position we take that we are separate from everything else in the universe and then act therefrom, treating it as out there over there that has what I want or what I don't want, and then acting out of that nonsense, because from the if you take as a given the size of the universe, and if at least some percentage of it is operating on a more cooperative basis than we are, then, you know, it's nonsense to think that we are separate, and yet that very thought system is what is controlling the world.
And that what you just said, what you mean, is very difficult for people to get.
Well,
I mean, obviously, because if they got it, we would all be different right now. So it's something that's out there. It's something that, from your mind, you have projected to me right now, because as a reality, on our planet, it doesn't exist except in tiny little patches, you know. You say, okay, like, there's a seed here. Look, there's a flower here. Where's the other one? Oh, there's another one. It's not like a field of flowers. They're isolated little flowers all over. They haven't become a field yet. The seeds haven't entered the earth to take over the fields. And that's what our job is. We plant seeds. I mean, if we act out of our truth, we plant seeds. That's what we do. We plant seeds constantly.
Well, let's examine the seed. So, because it's a good metaphor, but I think it's worth examining. But especially in context of this delusion that we're under, that everything's separate. So, to me, what a seed would be, well, let me ask the rabbi. Rabbi Greenberg, how are you?
I'm fine. It's good to be here. It's good to hear what you're talking about, this thing, because you're talking about seeds. And even Yeshua said, if you put a mustard seed in the ground, you won't get the camel. So it's good to know what seeds you're putting in the ground, and especially you're going to expect from the seed. The seed is the possibility. What is a seed? It's a possibility, and within the seed is all the components that make it possible for the seed to open up and for life to come out of the seed. And the good thing it is, too, a life that comes out like a leaf or a bug or a cell or a corpuscle or something like that. And so the life comes out of the seed, and so the seed you're planting is that it's all possible. You are possible. There's no end to your possibility, whoever you are. There is no end to the possibility. And you're planting that in their mind, someone's mind, that you can be forever expensive. Not expensive. I didn't say that. I didn't mean
too
that.
Bad. I was hoping to be expensive.
Very nice. Expensiveness is expensive. I will say that, because it's expensive, because what you have to give up is all yourself, the way you've concocted it. Is that expensive? It's not worth much, really. It's not expensive, but it feels expensive before you have to give it up.
You mean it?
Yeah, I think I mean it. It's a little expensive.
What I said before about planting seeds, really, I came from my mouth. It came from, not from my thoughts, but from my higher mind, which very often people speak of as their heart. To me, it's your higher mind. It's past your thinking. You can't think it. It exists in another place, but I think it's my higher mind. Anyway, so there. So from my higher mind, I realized that, look what we do, you know. We plant things. We plant children. We plant food. We plant the truth. Our truth as we see it. And everyone plants their truth. So at some point, the soil itself, which let's say is maybe God, the soil itself begins to bring them all together, all those truths that seem like they're so different, because within each of those truths is the true seed. So the seed drops into the soil, and all of a sudden, it is revealed what it truly is. You have to drop your seed to see the whole.
You mean it?
I mean it. La
calls you from everywhere. Willing the air. Holly Pound raising their sound. Dorhill and Dale telling the tale.
Christmas Bells by Pentatonix. We had to have Pentatonix. I'm so in love with that. That was just five people. That was all a cappella, everything mm-hmm. about that. There was no other instrument being played.
I love it.
But here's something that came to me while I was listening to that. Because they're saying, well, listen to these bells, and they all seem to say this, throw your cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer, old, young, meek, and bold, ding, dong, ding. This is their song. So I started, as that was playing, I started imagining this scene where it's a party, and people got party favors, and they're drinking. Everybody's, like, friendly, and in walks Donald Trump and all his constituency, and in walks Hillary and all their constituency, and in walks all the military, and in walks a bunch of jihadists, you know, and in comes in a bunch of Syrians and the president of Syria and Putin and all these people from all parts of Brazil and everybody who was enemies. They're all coming in and they're saying, hey, let's kick back, let's relax, let's have a party. We don't have to be enemies with each other. And so that to me is a vision that I'm going to hold and imagine.
Oh, you mean it, huh?
Yeah, that's fun. That's a fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's fun. It's a better image than anything I can think of that makes me feel not so good. That's a very good feeling.
It's a fun
image. Yeah.
Just imagine that everybody's like getting along and say, hey, like in that movie, Merry Christmas, that World War One movie about the soldiers. It was the British.
Right. Oh.
It was the Scottish, the French, and the British.
And the Germans.
And the Germans, I meant that. And they started, and song is what
right.
broke it for them. They had this singer who was a German opera singer. She started singing like Oh Holy Night. And of course, it's nighttime, and they're all in their trenches, and their feet are freezing. And then this voice comes out of it. And talk about compelling and bringing about unity. It was irresistible. And so to all you artists out there, I think it's up to us to create the art that is so
unifying.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. And but I mean, I'm a realist on many levels, even though my roots go way up.
Well, they started higher than a lot of people's roots. That's the thing.
But I feel like, as much as some people call me woo, I'm also very aware of the reality of the world in which I live. I mean, one can't escape the way we are mean to each other, which makes me very sad. And I live in a world where I see meanness, you know, and I, at the same time, I grew up in a world where there wasn't meanness. I was very fortunate to grow up in a world where the level of meanness was very small. You know, I could see where my mom would yell because she got scared and, you know, but, you know, and she'd act mean. But it wasn't real. because you could feel that she wasn't really being mean. She was just being scared.
So you mean that when she was being mean, she wasn't really being mean. What she really meant when she was being mean was that she was scared.
I mean it.
You mean that?
Yes, exactly. What did I say?
I don't know, but it sounded so like...
What you said.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Basically that.
I guess we mean it.
We
mean it.
I got to have Barney come in for just a minute, because I actually missed you. I miss you being on the show. And Errol, I'm so happy that you miss me, because I missed you, partner. You are like, sometimes I think of you as God's understudy. You know, you're a stand-in, because you're a standout fellow, and you're standing up and for yourself. And I hear that you...
I know why he likes Barney here.
Well, I look at the fellow, and I see he is capable of catching himself in the error of his ways. I always wondered if that was why they called you Errol, and I think I even heard that phrase once, to Errol is human, something like that, wasn't it, Rochelle? But anyway, you are very human, and it's good to just accept your humanhood here and find that balance. It's not easy to find here between just kind of letting it go and taking action. And I think the difference is, I know you want to take action, you're an actor. But the real difference is here. You gotta wait till all the components come together here. You can't start the rehearsal if half the cast is still missing. And so this is where trust and patience comes in. Not an easy thing for you, Errol. We've been noticing that about you. But that's why you're having this opportunity to practice.
You mean it, Barney. You mean it.
I mean it. So practice away, my boy, and you'll get it. No doubt about it. Who knows when? But I mean it. You'll get it.
I think he means it. I think he means it. By Jove, I think he means it.
By George, he means it. Oh, Professor Umbridge.
Oh, no.
Rochelle, dear, how are you doing? If you don't mind, I just want to hear from you to me, because I have missed you. You're so sweet, and you always have something so rich to contribute. Well, not always, actually, but...
You've been taking lessons from Errol.
Well,
don't make her head get too big. Don't say too many things that might...
I wouldn't think of that, my dear, because anyone who knows you knows better.
That's true. I don't have a very big head.
I mean it.
I don't have a big head because I just don't. I'd be out of balance with the rest of me.
But I would like to address the issue of knowing better. You see, there's knowing, and it can be very circumscribed. There's nothing wrong with the knowing unless it's error. And then, of course, you'd want to fix it. But knowing better is what? What?
I think what I see when I hear the word better is it's more expansive. It takes in more, it gives out more, and that's what makes it better. So like a child, at some point, is just this little thing, It gets better as it gets bigger, or could get better as it gets bigger. Is bigger better? That's from a piece that we do.
Bigger is better. Oh, yes, of course, the piece you do called The Meeting. But yes, the better, to me, is that you have more aspects of yourself that are capable of interacting with more and more aspects of the universe.
You better believe it, yeah.
Get more tools, more places to interface. As a matter of fact, they originally invented the word interface for just that very sort of thing, where things come together and they kind of link up to each other. By the way, I was in the Redwoods, and I was looking up the Redwoods, and I couldn't help but notice that part of why the Redwoods just go up and up and up and up is that on the bottom they all sort of join each other sideways. And so you might have started with one size redwood, but then the others join in. And before you know it, you've got six redwood trees fused together, and it takes quite a bit of time to get around one of those. So I think that's a wonderful metaphor. Thank you, California, for providing that metaphor where the fusion of the parts come together to make the whole better.
Well, I was thinking about the Earth, and I was thinking about climate as we were talking about bigger, better, and bringing us together. And the truth is, and I said at the beginning of the program, it really doesn't matter whether the people believe it or not, because it's going to change and we're going to have to face it at some point, in the sense that we're going to have to make changes. Like people who buy up million-dollar homes on beaches are going to get wet.
Or move the beach inland.
Well, the thing is that it will move inland, but in the meantime, the houses that they're living in are going to get wet. So the thing is that it's a very interesting thing in terms of our development, but if it hits our pocketbook, we take notice. Like, we don't take notice until it starts draining money from our banks. And then we get nervous. We get very nervous because we have created God as money, you know, in this country, for the most part. That's God. I mean, we worship money. So when it starts hitting, like people said, there's absolutely no reason not to legalize marijuana because it gives a lot of money to a lot of people, including the government. It's going to make billions. So we have what is known as test states right now. And as people begin to see the coffers fill as a result of this cash crop, they're like, oh, why are we putting people in jail when we could be making money at this? Anyway, one would think people would think like that, except for people who, you know, are so convinced that everything we do for pleasure in life is sinful.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as that.
Well, there are people like that.
Unless you mean, of course, that it's they're seduced into nonsense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that people who
mean it.
Speak about sin all the time, that we're sinners and try to bunch us into this little category, are nonsensical.
So what is sensical, then? Dr. Seuss would have talked about sensical.
Oh, he's so fun. Yes, because he's nonsensical. But his nonsensical is always paired with sensible.
It is. It has a certain coherence to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing about sensible, that the system somehow works together to maintain and continue to evolve itself. So the challenge now is, how is the system going to integrate with these changes that are coming? Let's just call them changes, however dramatic or not dramatic, but they're going to say they are dramatic. And how is it going to affect the process of adaptation? Because clearly that's one of the main gimmicks of evolution, is our capacity to adapt.
We will have to adapt. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, when things happen, you have to adapt. If you don't, you die.
And this brings us back to our subject. Because according to the Urantia book, the meaning of life is in its adaptability.
Ah, you mean
that. So there we go, the meaning. And here's another variation on that I heard from Yeshua in one of the Glenda Green books, where he talks about love. And then in parentheses, it says harmonic adaptation to the environment.
And the environment can be much more than just, you know, like grass and trees and things like that.
Well, the environment, to me, is anything that is the context in which I find myself. Anything that's a part of that context.
Right.
Is
the environment.
You know, from my, the cells are the environment, my body, the water is the environment. Consciousness is the environment. When I get down, and I was down the last few days, as I said, I think I was eating too much of this cynical perspective of how things are really polarized and angry and right on the brink of alienating and attacking people and yuck, all that stuff. And so I want to be more balanced, and I think I did that for myself today, because it's, yes, there's all that. And Marianne Williamson in her talked about all that. Yeah, there is all that. But as you get still, it's not that you won't do anything. You will do, but the doing will not come out of fear and a sense of separation. The doing comes out of a sense that we are one with all of it. We are whole, and it is the will of the universe to activate more and more wholeness. And as soon as we make that our personal agenda, You put a couple whole people together, and the parts are greater than, I mean, the whole is greater than the parts.
Remember I told you about that image I had as a child when the mercury broke out of the thermometer, and there were all these tiny little pieces of mercury all over the floor, and I used a little pencil. We had pencils in those days. And started moving them closer to each other, and as they got close to each other, they would merge until I had a ball of mercury. All those little tiny balls coalesced into one large ball. And in that moment, I felt that's what we're meant to be on the planet.
With one difference, though, is that, as I've learned from Teilhard de Chardin, as we come into union, we don't lose ourselves in that, consistent ball of mercury. We become more who we are. We stand out and become more differentiated because we connect with the whole, because it's the whole stuff coming into our life, all the different influences and things that impact us that are helping us reorient ourselves and become more and more delineated, more personalized, more like the personality of the whole of things.
But you see, I don't know that means we're separate. I mean, you speak of delineation, but no. What if every drop of water in the ocean is delineated?
They are.
But you, right. So like that mercury, every ball that came into union and created one big ball was still a total entity unto itself. What if that was true?
Well, I'll accept. Do you mean that?
I think I mean it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Okay.
But I think I do because I'm that way.
So this is Inside Out, and our sponsor, good friend Jeremy Bede.
Spirit brother and fellow artist.
And he's
marvelous
been nice
artist.
Enough to contribute to this, and we thank these wonderful folks, Don and Doug, for being so amazing and magnificent friends here at bbsradio.com.
And Go Raw.
Go Raw.
Which makes us feel good from the inside out.
And I want to thank a very special sponsor that we don't often acknowledge, and that is Evolution. Evolution is our main sponsor, and it has provided the wherewithal for us to be with you here tonight.
You mean it?
I think I do. You know, it's paid its dues. 14 billion years. I think it's paid its dues. I think now we can have conscious beings, and sure enough, within the last millimeter of relative to 14 billion years, conscious beings showed up like us, and we're still kind of like deer in headlights.
You know, I always tell groups of people when I'm working with them, if you don't believe in evolution, just look around. Does anybody here look like they did when they were 2 years old?
George over there looked like he was pretty much hasn't changed. George, how come you never changed?
And there's a little light bulb goes off in people's heads when I say that. Oh, yeah, we have changed. We have evolved. We're different. We're more.
Well, as we prepare ourselves for Christmas coming next week, let's use it as an opportunity to get more open, more innocent, more childlike, if you will. Even like a little, what do I want to say, a drummer boy who's coming for Christmas.
One of my favorites.
Bum 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 b what's fit to give our king pa rum pa pum pum rum pa pum pum rum pa pum pum. Shall I play for you pa rum pa pum pum pa rum pa pum pum? Ox and lamb kept time, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum. I played my drum for him, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum. I played my best for him, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum. Rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. Then he smiled at me, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Thank you again,
Pentatonics.
We have to let you go. It's been a fabulous night, Rochelle. I'm so grateful that you could be with me while I progress and stumble and help me get up each time. It's great.
Same here.
That being said, what do we need to remember?
We need to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
You mean it?